Hi, my name is Jay Demerol. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 709. I was thinking this morning again about running for the presidency. Why? Not because I think I could actually win, but because wouldn't it be great to have that pulpit? Even when people say he's a stark raving freaking lunatic, but you know, if you're doing a fundraiser and you need somebody to come talk, you at least want somebody that's going to draw the people in just to hear your insanity. I wouldn't mind being that person. I am, now, let me tell you a little bit about personality tests, or at least my take on personality tests. They're somewhat suspect. A lot of people said, oh, it's so much gibberish. It's like, it's like Ouija boards, divination, stuff like that. You know, it may look that way because people will alter themselves to fit what they think is proper for themselves, stuff like that. I think I ran across the first personality test I ever had in mid-90s. There was conflict in the public health office. I had just barely gotten on board, and frankly, I was just kind of like, what? Who cares? It's just a job. Why are we all trying to sing kumbaya and all that? Why don't we just all do our jobs and be happy and go home at night? But no, everybody wanted to do it. And they brought in some expensive consultant. And we did personality tests. Now, once the personality tests were done, I don't know what on earth that was supposed to do, except say that we were all different and had different needs. I didn't think the expensive test was required to say that. And I typed out Myers-Briggs, or who's the other guy? Kersey, maybe. I typed out as an INFP, which was supposed to be the healer. And I don't know if it was just the circumstances I was in then. I don't know. You know, and people say, well, your personality does change over time, or your perception of it. And it's like, well, and the whole point of a personality is that it really doesn't change. It's supposed to kind of be something that's lifelong and kind of like some, you know, chronic disease. You've got personality. Sorry, I don't mean to be rude to people who have lots of personality. But, you know, some people don't think about it that way. Anyway, who knows? So I used to type out as an INFP. This is the healer. And now I don't. I type out as an first I used to be an INFP. Now I type out as an INTJ. Which is really weird. They usually say those last two letters are the real defining issue. The first two are just kind of, the first two might change, the last two might. I don't know. You hear so many things from so many different places, it's hard to say. So I tend to say that maybe my first thing was a misinterpretation. Maybe that what I'm doing now is a misinterpretation. I don't know. My wife sees so much more and says she thinks this new one, the INTJ, is much more honest. And what's also funny is many, many autistic Asperger's people also type out as INTJs, which are kind of megalomaniac, really truth seekers. The reluctant leader, the person that takes over only because there's no one else to do it, or no one else that will do it, or no one else that should do it. And of course, that's what I'm feeling when it comes to the leadership of the United States of America. We have no leaders! None! At least none that worry about doing the right thing. They're all worried about, you know, how much money can I make? You know, how can I kind of jerk this into a possibility for me to get rich? Yada, yada, yada. Doodly, doodly, doodly. Anyway. And so I was going to run for president and just try to be as brutally honest as I can be, which is political suicide, but then again, I'm not really trying to be the president. I'm just running for the president because that gets you noticed. Any boob can say, I want to run for president. All of a sudden, they get a little bit of notoriety. Who knows why? Well, I know why that is because it's built into politics. It's built into politics that as soon as you announce that you're a politician, you know, our system all of a sudden starts giving you free stuff. Because, you know, politicians are in charge and politicians like stuff that's paid for by somebody else. So, you know, it's called taking advantage of the system. It's called monkey wrenching. So you're going to monkey wrench the political system. You know, and for all you know, you may actually get elected to office, you know. In fact, I think I'll run for every single office that's available to me. I'll run for my local county commission, city council. Okay, let's go from the very bottom. Although I don't want to be the dog catcher. Thank goodness it's not an elected position where I am. And I don't want to be in law enforcement. I'm not interested. You know, I would mostly just say, I ain't going to do jack squat. I want people to feel like they can do what they want to do. I'll be a lousy, you know, I can show you, don't vote for me for sheriff, you'll really regret it, because I won't do anything. I think people should resolve their own problems. I think if you call the police to come solve your problems for you, I think my job is to shoot all of you. And just say, I'll teach you to call the police. Solve your own problems. And if you shoot somebody, well, then you get to go to jail. You know, that's simple enough. You know, try to get people to be adults instead of being little kids. You know, the more powerful police force we have, the more kid-like everybody behaves. You know, I can behave like an idiot until the police come and get me. And you go, no, because your neighbor will come with a hammer and start beating on you with it. Because he'll take the law into his own hands. You know, you should never take the law into your own hands. And you go, you have to! You have to. You have to decide what really matters to you and what really doesn't. I found out that a lot of things just flat don't matter to me. I don't care. It's not worth it to me. I'm just on this rock getting through life. And, you know, I'm going to lay low. Let all the tellies do what it, you know, seal their doom. I'm not going to, you know, I don't intend on getting caught in the crossfire of tellies trying to destroy themselves. Let them do it themselves. I don't have to be nearby. I don't have to be the catalyst that makes this happen. Sheesh. Anyway, so run for president. Now, you guys have already heard some of my stuff about the reparations, the citizen reparations program. That I think we should sell off all the public land and give either little bits of formerly public land or money to the United States citizens as reparations for stealing their freedom and stomping all over them. I think you should do that. Of course, I think you should put every single public official in a pillory and let people throw stuff at them. Because honestly, I think they all deserve it. Of course, I guess we should be kind. Oh, cool, there's some deer on the road. You know, people are like, oh, look, they're so cute. And you go, deer are... They're vagrants. I'm sorry. I don't want you to lose your wonderful idea of Bambi. City people have a Bambi thing going. you know, PETA. PETA is a natural reaction to the Bambi generation. You know, aren't all animals wonderful? Of course, they start pissing people off when they say that you having a dog in your home is abusive to the dog, that he should be allowed to run free and not be on a leash and be forced and pressed into service to be your companion. You know, they start losing a lot of those kind-hearted people when they start talking like that. So you don't hear them talk like that too often. Every now and then, they actually do. But they usually say, shh, we'll lose a lot of money and a lot of support if you keep talking like that. It's wrong. Don't do it. Anyway, so, you guys have heard about my reparations idea. But here's basically another platform upon which I stand, which isn't terribly compatible with reparations. Reparations only happen if we can get the United States of America government to go along with actually returning freedom to people, which they're not going to do. Get serious. Once you have power, you don't give it back unless they just take it. We, you know, our freedom wasn't given to us in the United States, for instance. It didn't happen, you know. It wasn't like the British said, oh, you know, we should try this wonderful experiment across the sea. We should try giving people freedom and see what happens. That didn't happen. We fought a war. And the whole reason for the war was because the king over there said, you don't get freedom. What kind of crap is that? You belong to me! You know, when people were giving the king problems at home in England and they were fighting for their rights there, the whole point of having colonies are that you didn't have to listen to those mucky people. You know, they went over to America into indentured servitude. Come on! They belong to a royal chartered company, you know. They weren't supposed to be free. The whole point of having a colony was that there were supposed to be some places where you were still the absolute ruler. Even though at home you didn't feel that way anymore because, you know, they finally had gotten around to getting a parliament pulled together you know, the king said, well, you know, I've got veto power over what you guys decide. But he knew that if he used it, you know, they would come and they would burn him out. That was a wonderful thing the French taught everybody. Well, actually, after the American Revolution. But, you know, the French said, hey, you can rise up and give a king a lot of problems. To the point to where you can depose a king. And of course the poor English king was like, oh man, we can't tolerate that. You know, the whole point is I have power. I'm the king. Nobody tells the king what to do. So, you know, I don't know if the ultimate plan was that if Britain got too difficult, he would relocate himself to one of his more cowed dominions, you know, if he was going to move to Canada or to Australia or South Africa or India or, well, they really didn't have anything in India at the time. Anyway, that he would put himself somewhere where he wasn't, you know, he would probably come across the United States, and not to the United States, to British America, a place where his rule was absolute, where they had never set up really much, you know, public democracy. The king felt like he could just do dictums however he wanted to, and he didn't have to get them passed by some parliament. You know, he could set up a colony that was all his, that he ruled over as a tyrant. You know, he didn't want to look that way. But that's the way it ultimately has to be. Anyway, so we had to do something unpleasant. You know, we had to fight a war to free ourselves from these things. So I think when it comes down to it, when you offer and you say, we should have a vote. And people need to decide, are you for, I mean, it's not voting for a person, this is voting for an idea. Do you want liberty? I don't want it to be embodied in somebody. It's not embodied in me. I would like there to be, you know, it could even be a survey. Do you really want liberty and freedom to do what you want to do? And see what the vote is. Give the American people a clear-cut, you know, point in time where they're going to make a decision. Do I like liberty or do I not? You know, and don't try to put up five different things. What form of government do you want? You know, democracy, the republic, something else. Have an actual, you know, I'm not sure we should even do it as a survey because people just, you know, people in power just kind of go, oh, that's interesting, and then they just go along their merry way. They always cheer it up when, you know, they always talk about how important these polls are when it supports their position. But, you know, they're the first ones to poo-poo it when it doesn't go the way they would like it to go. And you know what? I don't think anybody in Congress wants liberty, except for Ron Paul. Maybe a couple of other people that kind of have, you know, that are kind of hidden libertarians that won't dare vote that way, won't dare do that for fear of not ever being in power ever again. I think we should do that. Say, we're not voting for people now, we're voting for an idea. Do you still want liberty? Do you want there to be less laws or more laws, you know? Or about the same? You know, you could do it that way too, I guess. I don't know. That sounds more like a survey. I don't want it to be a survey. But I would like to do it in a way that might be a little sticky. That might mean that when your legislator, which they will, I guarantee you, your legislature will go against the will of the people on this, you know, if anybody ever said this is a country, you know, by, for, and led by the people, and you go, no, it's not. He says, I can give you just rock bottom proof. Now, nobody will want to do this, and they'll fight it tooth and nail and say, no, we won't do this, because that's a slanted question. What does liberty mean anyway? We're all for freedom from fear. Freedom from fear means a police state. You go, but that's not liberty. See, liberty is very different. Liberty is where you can do what you want. Liberty. Freedom can have several meanings depending on what else follows it. Freedom from, freedom from, you know, oppression. Freedom from government, you know. You can come up with all kinds of things for freedom, but liberty in and of itself is quite a defined thing. So I think we should vote on the whole idea of liberty. But when it goes the way I think it will, which means that the majority of Americans do not want liberty anymore, then it's like, and you can say it beforehand, it's not some great secret, it's not entrapment or anything like that. It says, then we have a basic division here. In our land, we need two separate countries now. One that's for liberty and one that's not. And I want to be the first one to say that I want to be on the other side. The United States of America can go on its very way getting, you know, basically wanting to be a part of the EU, wanting to be a subunit of the United Nations, wanting to do all that stuff, wanting to basically join the world as a sister state, you know, to just about anybody, says, I actually want a land, a country, a nation, and I think that's what's happening. When, you know, when people say, our nation's falling apart, I said, you want to know why? Well, we're so divided. He goes, right. And they all say, well, we need to come together. I go, no, we don't. There is no coming together. If you're not in favor of liberty, then you're totally diametrically opposed to these other guys. The guys who want liberty. You know, the only question is there going to be a war when we find a side that we're going to part the ways? And I'm saying, let's just get to it. Let's just part the ways. You know, let's try to be amicable about it. I'm all for the Southwest. And I don't want to call it seceding or anything else. I want to say America basically has a division. And what that division says is there are basically two countries trying to vie for supremacy. And I think it's the same way. You know, people say, oh, there's so many differences between Republicans and Democrats. And you go, okay, then fine. Let's draw a line. All the Republicans move to one side of that line, all the Democrats to the other, and let's just create two countries. If we've got two different people who have two different visions of the way the world, the way America should be, split America in half. Let one side have what they want, and let the other side have what they want. Just split it. Don't do it north and south, because then people all start talking about that. You can do it east and west this time. Do I want to be on the Republican side? No. Do I want to be on the Democrat side? No. But I think we should codify that. I think if the whole point is if there's diametric opposition between two people, they should be allowed to have a place where they get what they want. And you can split it up by the numbers. You can have a poll done. You know, and you go, do you like the idea of socialism? And all the socialists get counted, and then you divvy up the land accordingly. Okay, this much of the United States is now a new country. It's called, you know, the Socialist States of America or whatever. You know, and they can go off on their own. If we want to have a union between these different outfits for whatever, for defense of our common shores, I don't have a problem with that. Let's do it. Now, I'm all in favor of saying, okay, if you really don't want liberty, you know, this whole thing about the fact that we have to be united, I don't see it anymore. I don't see it anymore, especially when you're not united to begin with. Well, we've got some common ground. We need to put aside our differences. And you go, no, those differences are so wide, are so vast, that we don't need to do that. If we have serious differences, that was why the United States of America even began, was because of serious, deep differences between the people who lived here in the United States and the people who live there in Britain. We couldn't be the same people. It doesn't mean that we can't, you know, that we can't work together on certain things that we feel are common. We do that now. We're two different countries, but boy, let me tell you, we often work together. You know, why not? You don't say, well, you know, the Republican states of America and the Democrat states of America, they have a lot of things that aren't the same. And we need to be ready. You know, there needs to be a separation between them, and the Republicans need to move. If the Republicans are in the wrong place, they need to move. And if the Democrats are in the wrong place, they need to move. You know, you need to vote with your feet more. But that also means, that implies that once you get to a place where you wanted to go, you know, it's going to be as advertised. That's probably the biggest problem with the United States right now. It's not what's advertised. We get lied to consistently. Mostly trying to hold together something that doesn't need to be held together. Oh, you're saying that we're not, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance says that we're united. And you go, that was written by a socialist who was trying to sell flags to schools. That was what the pledge was. Says, I know you guys think that the most important thing of all is to be united, no matter what, no matter how much we hate each other, we have to live together because that's important. And you go, no, it's not important. We see what happened to Iraq, for instance, which really desperately wants to be three different countries. You know, England puts them together in one, I think, just to piss them off. You know, colonial oppressors' last shot at guys that they, you know, that they were ticked off were starting to pull away from them. And it's like, well, okay, whatever. You know, and people say, oh no, we can't have a divided Iraq. And you go, why not? Wouldn't that promote peace if one group, oh no, because the Sunnis would ally with Iran, we can't tolerate that. And you go, why not? They have a common belief system, they seem to think alike, why can't they be together? Oh no, we can't tolerate that. And you go, so you're not trying to produce peace, you're trying to jerry-rig things to go to your political ends, which have nothing to do with the people on the ground and how they feel. You're forcing them to live together whether they want to live together or not. Iraq is starting to sound a whole lot like a divided United States, sorry, a divided States of America. And you know what? Maybe they need a divide. Maybe that's a good idea. I'm all in favor of letting that happen. You know, people say a lot of people would feel like that they would like to secede from the United States because they don't feel like that they want to be dictated by a majority. And they go, you know, the only time that people will really be happy is when they're in the majority somewhere. Even if it's just on, you know, 5 square feet of ground, but you could be a majority. You could be a majority of one. But you have to have some land, and you have to have the ability to dictate how things go on your piece of land. I think that's inherent. I think that was something that is a constitutional idea, but that since we decided that we must be united, you know, everybody says, oh, Abraham Lincoln was just the greatest man on the face of the earth, and you go, you know what? I don't believe it. I think his basic doctrine of how dare you try to separate from us and you look at that and you go, that's a sick sign of codependency. If Abraham Lincoln is anything at all, he's probably the poster boy for codependency. We need the South. We need the South industry. We need its textile mills and stuff like that. By golly, they are not allowed to leave. They can't form their own country. There wouldn't have been a war unless the North went ballistic. You know, there wouldn't have been a war, but the North went ballistic and said, no, no, no. And decided to start a war. I don't think the South was trying to go for a war. They weren't. They were striving to go away. You know, calling what the war between the states a civil war is wrong. It wasn't a civil war. You know, the Southerners were not trying to dominate the Northerners and take over the whole country. There might have been a few that may have thought of that, but that wasn't what was happening. What was happening was the country was simply splitting in half. There was enough differences between what was happening up north between the sediments up north and the sediments down south that they were splitting. And the North said no. So, you know, and people always go, oh, those Southerners, they were so bad, those dirty rebels. And you go, rebels against what? States made a choice to secede from the Union. Now, I'm not saying that everybody in that state agreed with what that was doing, but I think they would have been freely allowed to leave. But they didn't do that. You know, a war started. Well, you can't do that. You can't be like that. We have to stay united. And therefore, we're going to kill everybody to make it happen. And you go, what kind of unity is that? What it ultimately ended up being was, I guess it kind of, it was a war of oppression. The North took over the South. Reconstruction was occupation. In the classical sense. If you want a good view about, I think, the basic tactic going on in Iraq, it is the basic tactic that happened in the war between the states. Even, you know, it really wasn't the war, although it was atrocious. You know, so many people died on both sides while trying to force this nation to stay in one piece. That, you know, and what we euphemistically now call the reconstruction of the South was the total decimation of whatever will they had to be themselves. It was, you know, they took over the schools, they indoctrinated the children. You know, part of that whole, I can only imagine that part of the Pledge of Allegiance, which actually came into being in the late 1800s, it was not like a founding document at all. It was made up. You know, it was a sales tactic. It caught on because the North loved it, because it said that what the South did was obscene and evil and wrong. You know, the whole term of united was all of a sudden used as this billy club just to beat the crap out of you. Yeah, we will be united! You know, while he's bludgeoning you with this thing. How dare you? Get down your knee, you know, get down the floor, genuflect before me, because I'm for union, and union is the only acceptable thing. It's the only righteous thing to do is be united. And you go, not if unification means that half the people have to die to make it so. That's not unity, that's tyranny. You know, so a ton of tyranny was enacted by the ending of the war between the states, you know. It was almost put into law. Thou shalt have no power to break away from the mighty United States government. You know, you may not do this anymore. Before then, this had never been tested. As far as everybody knew, you could do that. If there was a state that felt like it wasn't being treated well by the federal government or by the other states, they could choose to walk away from it. Well, first they threw force of arms, and at the point of a gun, they said, you ain't going to do that no more. You ain't going to think that way no more. Then came the propaganda and indoctrination. And now, if you say such a thing, people just look at you like you're crazy. What, are you stupid? I don't even think that's legal. And you go, legal? Hello? Of course the United States of America is going to say it's illegal. A war was fought. They killed thousands of people. Hundreds of thousands of people over it. They occupied a whole other country, and that's become kind of the model. You know, if people go back and they say, well, you know, Vietnam is a model, you know, World War II is a model, and you go, no, it was the war between the states that was the ultimate model. We're still fighting it. Except now the United States thinks that the whole world, or at least all of the world except for Russia and China, because we don't think we can win that war. Anybody that we think we can dominate quickly in a war, we consider to be a U.S. property. And if we don't like what, you know, and we will apply the war between the states doctrine, which is exactly what's going on right now in Iraq. You know, we don't tolerate splinter groups. We don't let them stand. Remember Ruby Ridge. Tiny, it's a one family splinter group. One family. And the United States government couldn't tolerate it. Oh no, we can't do that. You know, trump up 50,000 charges. I think the branch Davidians may have been that way. You know, it's always about the children. You can always justify any act you do that is actually evil by saying that you thought children may have been hurt there, or that children may have been may not be being treated well, or you don't think it's good for the children, because we have given government total authority. If there's children involved, we want you to go marching in there. So that's how they'll do it. If, you know, that's how we ultimately got into Iraq. You know, that's how we finally got pushed it over the edge, and we said we were going to do it, and people grudgingly said, okay, fine. I don't think it's a good idea, but okay. Was that we were going to liberate those people, which we considered all those people children. And Saddam Hussein was their nasty, abusive father. You know, we have gone down that tortured road to saying we want government to always be able to step in and, you know, and parents have really no power over their kids, only as much as government tolerates, which isn't terribly much anymore. You know, and it just gets larger and larger. If a community did that, I'm sure that the National Guard would be called out to quell that conflict. If a state did it, it would still go on, although it would be a bigger war. Of course, we already have our thing already cooked up that we can, you know, that we have the right to fight enemies foreign and domestic, and of course the government gets to decide who domestic enemies are. It's the war between the states doctrine. And what I'm saying is, let's have a referendum on liberty. Let's have a, you know, this is why the feds do not want referendums, because they know that if they have them, their will is often thwarted by the people. That's why California is such a mess to govern, because these people won't be governed. They won't do it. Liberals worked so hard to take over government that all of a sudden California decided that they could have referendums. And the liberals are so angry, because they had worked so hard. And then all the rules changed, and now you can have a referendum, and that referendum can just wipe away everything. I think it would be fun to have a national referendum, which is illegal, which is not constitutional. Well, I don't know if it's not constitutional. It could be constitutional. Certainly expressing the will of the people, especially in a land, Lisa was bringing this up, you know, 90% of people did not want the economic bailout that just happened a couple of weeks ago. All of a sudden became anti-news. Nobody talked about the bailout again. I'm sure we're never going to hear about what's going to happen with all that money. It just kind of happened. I'm sure it'll find its way into politics pockets. I'm sure it'll find its ways into bridges to nowhere. I'm sure it'll find its ways into 100 different things that they say, oh, this is going to prop up the economy. This is great. You know, paying off judges is going to be declared a legitimate way to prop up the economy, right? We can't have judges not paying it. Golly! The economy could fall apart. Oh, we have to keep, you know, now we'll actually bribe them with public monies instead of private ones. Yee-hee! I doubt you're ever going to hear about that money again. In fact, most people forget it even happened. You know, things will, over the course of time, adjust to the new circumstance. We'll all become used to it and we'll forget. But there really was a crisis. Like, you know, people say, oh, the 80s were horrible. Oh, the 80s were just terrible. And you know what? I lived through the 80s. I was a teenager in the 80s. And a young man. Now, I turned 13 in 1980, which was really considered the 70s still, because of what a mess it was. And when the 80s were done, I was, how old was I? I was out of college by then. No, I wasn't. I got out of college in 93. But I was in college in the late 80s. I was on my mission during the 80s, all that good stuff. And you know what? I don't remember it. Because, you know what? It wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, yeah, I think on the ground, when you were there, you went, oh, this is horrible, oh my gosh, everything, the world, the sky is falling, the sky, you know, it's like Chicken Little. And then it settled out, and everybody went back to what they were doing. You know, some people lost their jobs, but, you know, they found others. The economy came back again. Of course, the government will always say that it was because they intervened and they saved everything, which I doubt is true. They had no clue. They can operate by the supposition that, you know, it's okay, whatever you end up doing, you know, the basic rule of the economy is that it will right itself at some point. So you can either do nothing and just wait it out, but that's not good politically. Doing nothing is never a good thing to do politically. Politically, it's always good to do something, even if it's the wrong thing to do, and then when everything settles out, you take credit. Because it was the thing that you said was going to fix it, quote-unquote, fixed it. And you go, no, it didn't. Nature fixed it. It'll always fix itself. That's the nature of it. The economy or a capitalistic system is a funny little thing because it depends on a few things. You know, people can say, oh, greed's going to destroy us, and you go, well, it'll destroy people, but it won't destroy the economy. In fact, it is one of the necessary ingredients of keeping the economy running is greed. The kind of economy we have now. I'm not voting in favor of the economy or not, of the way we do things, or laissez-faire capitalism or anything. I'm just saying, if it works, why screw with it? But see, politicians can't just not screw with it. You know, there's too much hay to be had in having fights about, you know, nature. You know how much fun it is to talk about climate control right now? You know, it was about greenhouse gas. We've changed our tune on that a little bit to say it's all about, you know, climate change, which is really fun because, you know, people were saying, oh, global cooling, oh my gosh, we're all going to go into a new ice age back in the 70s. Well, in the late 90s and the early aughts that we're in right now, or that we've just passed, you know, it's all about global warming. Oh, we're all going to cook. You know, the deserts are going to spread, all the ice caps are going to melt, and we're all going to die. And, you know, and people can take credit for, you know, they can say, this policy of mine really kind of helped. We didn't have global cooling because I put this, you know, because I was part of the group that put this legislation into thing. We banned CFCs, you know, or we banned Freon, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they go and they take credit for it. Taking credit probably for something that would have just kind of swung around naturally. Probably did. But, you know, there's no proof either way. Because you can't do it. You know, it's something that's not provable. But, of course, if you defy that, everybody thinks you're a kook. Because, I'm sorry, everybody has their bias. Everybody gets their pay from one side or the other, and we very easily fall into our camps. The fact that there's money attached just smooths the way a bit. Nobody wants to feel like they were stupid or wrong, especially experts, a lot of people with letters after their names. They don't want to look stupid. They want to put forth a theory, and they want that theory to be proven right. So they will trump up, you know, different charges. And, of course, the politicians love it, too, because money is shuffling around, you know. Crises are fantastic for politicians. God, is there money to be made? Wow. You know, every war we've had, including the Civil War, has been a political war. It hasn't been necessary. The only necessary war we fought was the Revolutionary War to get us away from England, to say that we needed to be separate. The next group of people who said, hey, we've got serious differences from somebody else, we need to be separate, the answer was no. And it's been pretty much that way a lot, with a few rare, small exceptions. The basic attitude since 1800 has been there are no separations, there are only consolidations. And we only supported separations when the Berlin Wall fell, when communism fell apart, because we felt like it was a political gain for us. Not because we were trying to be kind to the people. And, you know, you can say on the ground, oh, yeah, we, you know, life is so much better under capitalism now. And that may or may not be true. You have to talk to the people and how they feel about it. Okay? People should have the right to have, to be able to have a government system that fits their nature. This world is big enough that there should be some space for every single outlook on life. There should be. The standing rules should be, you can't just take over other people because you have an ideological difference with them. That's not good enough. Anyway, so... You know, I think if we took all of the habitable, decent land, and I'm crazy enough, if I could get some liberty by taking some really crappy land, some hunk of desert, some frozen wasteland, if I could have that and have my liberty, you wouldn't even have to consider me. I would take the crap land. I would want some more of it. You know, if I'm going to have a desert, you need to give me at least, you know, 1,000 acres of it. Anyway. I think if you took per capita, split up the world, and said each person in the world can have this much land, it'd be pretty big. It would be pretty sizable. I think people would be... impressed. I think those people who talk about, you know, zero population growth, the carrying capacity of the earth, blah, blah, blah. I think if we actually sat down and figured it all out, you know, don't take into account deserts, even though people can live in deserts, just chop them off. Just say no. We're just going to take pieces of land that are still in pretty good shape and that have a pretty decent climate, not horribly, not frozen. We're not going to count Antarctica. We're not going to count most of northern Canada. Even though you could. There are people that live up there. They live up there pretty happily. We won't count that. I bet it would still be pretty good. I bet that every single person would get a few acres of land, probably quite a few. And, you know, but, you know, that's not palatable to political systems because they're about power and gain. You know, once people think they have, you know, that things aren't equitable, once they think that things aren't, oh, dare I say the word fair? Once they think that they're maybe due more than what they're able to get right now, that would be a serious blow to the present way of things. Which the present way of things are, there is a group of, it's probably more than a handful, it's not more than a few thousand people who get to do whatever they want and that get to dictate what other people are allowed to do. And you know, whether certain sections of the world are ruled over by quote-unquote democracies or republics or places where supposedly the people rule. Have you lived in the United States? Those of you who live in the United States, have you lived in the United States long enough to figure out that what you personally what really doesn't matter? That we tend to go into herds? I think it's more visceral than this, but that one of the big reasons that we go into herds is because we're trying to protect ourselves from people who can hurt us, and we know just kind of naturally that they're powerful people and that we try to counterbalance that power with our numbers. You can feel it, can't you? I'm not for succession. I'm for division. I am for the fact that on your ground, and you should have some ground, if you're renting, you know, people always say, oh no, you'll have to rent for years and years and years before you can earn enough money to have your own piece of land. I think that's just delirious. I think that's so funny because I'm sorry. 200 years ago, when this country was new, dunderheads, drunken bums, could earn enough money in 2 years to buy outright. And I don't mean 30-year lease, or a 30-year loan on a piece of property. In 2 years, at most, that person could have a piece of land. Of course, back in those days, you couldn't have your land just surreptitiously stolen from you through property taxes. You know, as far as I'm aware, the largest shuffling of land in the United States, by and large, isn't from sale, it's from being taken for non-payment of taxes. It's actually the government grabbing this stuff. And they grab it, and they profit off it. They resell it at auction on any given courtyard steps. Auctioning off land when the treasury seems a little low. This is a great way to replenish it, is to start saying, oh, this guy hasn't paid his taxes in a few years. Therefore, we're taking his land. And we're going to sell it. Of course, you know, once you buy land that way, it's not really that you're going to get land. You usually don't get land. You get a partial title to that land. You know, your basic bid pays the tax thing, and you now have a lien on that property. You can choose to exercise that lien and try to evict somebody, but I think that's difficult. I think that's difficult. By and large, what you end up doing is you extort the person that wasn't paying his taxes, who is actually still owns that land technically, even though now there's this weird lien that's been applied to it for tax reasons. You know, it's just basically saying that the government doesn't want to screw with tax collection from these people. Therefore, they'll sell the courtyard steps. They will basically sell the collection of the taxes to some private entity, and they can do it. Now, some people might say, oh, well, you know, I guess my land is gone. But there's a process that goes through it. What it basically is that you sell your deed to somebody else who has a lien on it. But yeah, you know, that's been an incredible power grab. That's how the incredible powerful can prey on the incredibly weak and say, you know what, the most important thing to making a person a slave is making sure they can never hold land. And we've done that rather effectively. The price of land now is just immense. Even out here where I live, which was what's called the Great American Desert, and called Sahara, and called good for nothing, an acre of land costs $1,000 at least. It's amazing. It costs as much for a parcel of land here as it costs for a parcel of land in green, lush farmland that's just had an economic downturn. It's amazing. And the whole point is, don't let people have land. Then they'll think they have rights. Then they think they have something. Then they think they have some power. We can't tolerate that. So the first rule is, now it's okay that they're willing to fork over some money for some temporary control of some land. That's okay, because that is a great way to extort a ton of money from poor people. I was talking about this one episode not too long ago. What a great way. You fleece poor people who say, I just want to have a house someday. And you tell them stories, you know. Well, you know, having equity in a house is worth a lot more than just paying rent. And sometimes, or at least back in the 90s and in the late 80s, when one could work out some pretty weird deals, that was when our credit crisis started, was when they started saying, hey, we can give people this stuff for nothing, because frankly we can sell out all these weird loans to all kinds of interesting people. And we'll get rich. It was all about getting rich at about 7 or 8 different levels. And, you know, there it is. And it was getting rich off of the poor. You didn't want to invest your own money. You get the poor to do it. It's the American dream. Come on, you can own your own house. You know they'll only make 6 or 7 payments at most before they've sunk themselves into another hole, because poor people, you know, often many poor people are poor because they don't know how to manage themselves. Not all of them, but many of them. Enough of them that this system works. It's basically rent, but you can add a lot of fees to it when you're buying it. Well, you know, you're going to have to put 5% down. So the guy puts 5% down on a piece of property that he can only realistically hold on to for 6 or 7 months. Then, you know, and it's always done by this type of deed that's really easy to rescind. You know, if you haven't paid for 2 or 3 months, this deed is null and void and you forfeit everything you paid. So now, this guy who is quote-unquote selling you this house, not only did he get rent for the time you were sitting in it, but he got 5% of what he perceived of as the value, not what you perceived of as the value. Because usually owner finance stuff, you know, owner finance is a double-edged sword. It can be really easy to get into owner finance, but let me tell you, when you walk away clean with Zippo. You don't have anything. You know, people say, well, I could resell the house. And the guy says, no. Part of the owner finance deal is you can't resell the house. It's not yours to resell. It's mine. Well, I don't feel like I got to get this. It's tough. You made a bad choice. You know, they take advantage of your naivety. The fact that you think this is a normal bank loan and that you can just go and you get the house and you can turn around in a couple of months and sell it for a profit, just like the rich guys do. Don't they talk about that on TV? You know, play real estate like the rich people do. You can profit off of this too. And people think they can do that, and then they find out they can't. They said, no. This is basically rent, you know, and at some point, after many years of paying, you can buy. After I'm rich, you know, basically these guys are bankers. Basically the people selling the house to you are bankers. And bankers don't go into anything unless they're going to get filthy rich off of it. I looked at one of the mortgages that I bought, or one of the mortgages I got for I think our second, maybe our second house, the one here in Clovis on Conley Street. And we figured out how much interest we were going to pay. It was 2 times, almost 3 times, what everybody decided that the house was worth, what the loan was actually for. Just because over 30 years, that's how much got paid. When you're buying something at like 7% interest, that means 7% a year interest. That doesn't mean 7% over the entire loan. That means 7% a year. So if it's 30 years, add that sucker. You know, you need to do multiplication. 7 times 30 is 210. I paid 210% interest. That means if I gave a loan for $100,000, I would end up paying $310,000 for this house. What a great racket, isn't it? But see, it sounds so good because they do it in annual, you know. The percentage rate is annual. They don't tell you what's going to be in full. What a great racket. Anyway, so, but, you know, there's wonderful political things to this whole situation. Because if you can keep people living in apartments, if you can keep people on credit, if you can keep people constantly beholden to other people, they, you know, and the great part is they make slaves of themselves. You know, when those guys want to rise up and say, I don't want to be treated like this anymore, since they stare at themselves in the belly button and say, but I got myself into this mess. As soon as you say, I didn't force you to take that money, you voluntarily put yourself in slavery to me. You know, and then people go, oh, yes. And of course, the people with the money that are loaning it out to you are laughing their way to the bank. You know? And they can afford to be nice to you on occasion. I had one, he's passed away now, so I guess I don't feel too bad mentioning it. He didn't mind that I didn't pay sometimes. He tacked it on to the other end. You know, it was kind of an owner finance thing, and I felt so horrible when I had to go to him and say, I'm not going to be able to make good on this thing. And he just kind of shrugged. It didn't bother him at all. In fact, he was real willing to not renegotiate the terms, but to throw those months back at the very end back of it. He was willing to do that because it didn't matter to him. He owned that piece of property. It wasn't costing him but a little bit of taxes. And I was paying the taxes, too. He gave me his tax bill and said, you have to pay this, too, and you know all this stuff, you know, because you own it now. Everything he was getting from me was pure profit. And it had the traditional markup, you know, 7, actually I think it was 10. It was 10% interest, but it was yearly, which means that if I would have gone, and I think it was only a 15-year loan on that one, if I had gone for, you know, 15 years at 10%, he would have got 150% above what the thing was actually worth, and he got to set the value of it. We didn't get to negotiate this because I was doing an owner finance. You know? And when you're doing an owner finance, you know, it's all up to the owner. The owner gets to set those prices. If you start dickering with him, he'll just say, no, I'm not going to do it, and you can't get financing for this because I know you don't have the money. You wouldn't have come crawling to me for it unless you would have had the money. Of course, he was trying to sell me life insurance and everything else. So, you know, he was trying to make me feel good while he was actually just pulling out of my pocket. Now, I'm not saying it's illegal. It could be of questionable ethics, but, you know, in this day and age, not even that. It's just business. It's just the way business goes. Now, and I wasn't asking for favors, but, you know, did I get fleeced? Well, yeah. But it was all spelled out, you know. I may have been foolish, but I could never come back and say that he tricked me, because he didn't. I let myself in there hook, line, and sinker. I did. You know, and that's the great story. People scream at the injustice of stealing somebody away from their home in Africa, putting them in chains, and then selling them like cattle. That's horrible. But giving people wide berth and opportunity to enslave themselves through credit, through the American dream. And, you know, next time people talk about the American dream, they'll say, and what dream is that? Rich people can fleece poor people by suckering them into stupid ideas that are made to separate them from what little money they have? Is that the American dream? Well, then if that's it, boy, if we got the American dream working great, it's beautiful. Wow. Anyway, so, this is Jane Emro. And, you know, the first thing I'd add to the Constitution is that people are free, period. Every single contract done needs to have an exit clause that is, you know, I don't know. I don't know if there is a way to just in one sweeping blow get rid of a whole bunch of evil. I don't think there can. You just have to have people that don't enter into those kinds of things, no matter how attractive they may look. You say, don't do it. So there's two kinds of people. People who have figured it out and figured out how to profit off of it. Well, there's actually three. There's those people, and they have no compunctions about profiting off it because they've figured out that what makes the world go around is getting a regular bit of money that just keeps coming because you've profited off of something. The other group of people is the people who get fleeced by those people, by saying, oh no, everything's great, everything's beautiful, you should be happy, this is just fantastic. There's those that draw you into it for their own fun and gain. And then there's the third group of people that doesn't get involved in it at all. I've tried to be that third kind of people. Sometimes I've succeeded, sometimes I haven't. I can't say one way or the other. But you need to be that third kind of person, and you need a place where you can be that third kind of person. I think we should set up our own country, and if there has to be a war fought about it, let the other people declare the war. That's what happened last time. The South said, hey, we're going to be a separate country now. We're going to elect our own president. We're just going to go off and be on our own. And there was no war then. The war started when the North said, hey, there's a fleecing opportunity available here, and the only way we're going to get the profit off of it is to start a war. So that's exactly what they did. And if you think that Abraham Lincoln was this wonderful unifier, he wasn't. He wasn't a wonderful unifier. He saw a political opportunity, or he got duped by people who saw a political opportunity, and they started the war, and the war had nothing to do with any of the highfalutin things that you think it's about. Oh, it's about freeing the slaves. Oh, it's about doing this. Oh, it's about doing that. And it's like, no, it's not. It's not about any of that tripe. It was about having an opportunity to take advantage of something and being able to pay into something else. That's what politicians do. That's what evil, contriving people do. Oh, I can make us taking over half the United States and just kind of, ruling over it with an iron fist and being a dictator. We can do it. We can say that we're going to do it because slavery is evil. We don't care. We can even free the slaves. Who cares? We can fleece them too. Woohoo! We can promise them tons of land. Free land. Woohoo! You can have it. We conquered. We'll give you land. And then you can sell it to them. They won't be able to do it. You can sell it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again to different people who just go, oh, I'm really sorry. I can't make up for it. I can't make the money. And you find out that the other guy, it was really obvious when this guy said, hey, it doesn't bother me. We can stretch it out, And he was kind of leading me down the primrose path. Well, it's okay, I know it's hard to start a business and all, what he said wasn't true, but he was going to take advantage of it. You don't have to pay me now, you can pay me later. And it's like, oh, God. I was getting sucked in, and I'm really grateful that it ultimately didn't work out, I just walked away. But he did get quite a bit of my money because I did put some money down. And that money was just lost. But he just got it for nothing. He got it for nothing. He didn't take any risk at all. It didn't matter if I tore up his building. Somebody would come around who needed a building. Didn't care how much it was torn up. Because it needed to be torn up anyway the next time somebody came through and had some other idea for it. I put so much sweat equity into that. My mom put in so much money for it. He turned around and gave it to somebody, you know, he turned around and made a deal with somebody else, and she got it for next to nothing. And he got to up the price, too, off of my labor. Wasn't that cool? That's how it works. That's how it works. Is it ethical? Probably not. Is it the way things work? Yes. You know, and that's okay. He got to play with his grandkids and feel good about it, you know, and he got to play with his grandkids a lot. Was he wealthy? Yes. Wealthier than I was, for sure. And, you know, and most of our economy says there's only two kinds, you know, that says there's only two kinds of people. Those getting fleeced and those fleecing. Which one do you want to be? Of course, everybody raised their hands for, I want to be the fleecer, not the fleecee. And that's what happens. You get sucked into it just as readily, you know. I don't think he ever decided one day that he was going to be taking advantage of people. It just kind of happened. And he learned how. You know, somebody sat down and told him, hey, man, so there's two kinds of people. Which one are you going to be? Here's how it works. You know. And you just do what it takes. And it's like, no, this is, you don't do that. But, you know, the number of people who want to take that third course, which is just stay away from that, is pretty small these days. So we wouldn't need a very big country, but we would probably need a lot of guns, because trust me, the United States of America would be coming after us, because they will not be refused what they think is theirs. And you know what? The United States government thinks everything is theirs. This is Jane Emerald. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 709. Let's talk about being the president, but it was only to talk about stuff like this and to help people to know what's going on. This is Jane Emerald. Have a great day.